Welcome to Get Sleepy, where we listen, we relax, and we get sleepy. My name's Thomas, and just as always, I'm your host. We're in a celebratory mood this week. Tonight marks 5 years since the very first episode of Get Sleepy was released on podcast platforms all over the world. I can't quite believe it's been 5 years, but I am beyond proud of everything our amazing little team has accomplished over that time, and I'm deeply grateful to all of our writers and narrators that have contributed such beautiful, dreamy content to the show. We're also incredibly grateful to each and every one of you. We've had over 150 million podcast downloads over the course of those 5 years. That's a lot of good night's rests that we've hopefully brought your way. But we simply wouldn't be able to do what we do if it wasn't for all of you, our wonderful community of listeners. I consider each and every one of you to be a friend, and collectively, we're like one big family of like-minded sleepyheads, enjoying the best stories and meditations to help us rest well each night. To commemorate 5 years of the show, we have an extra special full week of episodes from tonight through till Friday. 5 episodes for 5 years of the show. So, let me tell you about the first that we'll be enjoying shortly. It's set in the beautiful region of Patagonia, Argentina. There, we'll join Petra as she explores Trevelin, a town founded by Welsh migrants in the 19th century. It's an intriguing prospect for any traveller, a place with a truly unique identity. Petra is keen to experience Trevelin, with its fusion of Welsh and Argentinian cultures. Having Welsh roots in my family, this story was a fascinating read for me, and actually I can't wait to show it to my dad and check if he knew the story of Trevelin. I'd like to thank Jo Steer for her amazing work writing it. She also penned tomorrow night's story, the first of our bonus episodes for this week, where we'll experience some dancing at England's historic Blackpool Tower Ballroom. Be sure to join us again tomorrow for that. But for now, let's prepare in the usual way, by finding a position that feels relaxed and comfortable. Take a deep breath in, inhaling through the nose, and let your eyes close as you exhale through the mouth. Keep your attention focused on the breath, breathing in through the nose and out through the mouth. Inhale gently, as if you're smelling a flower, and when you exhale, do so softly, as if blowing a bubble and watching it float away through the air. Feel the cool breath that flows in through the nostrils, calming your body and mind. And on the warming out breath, release all cares and concerns. Your mind is now clearer, like a bright blue sky. Let's stay with that image of a sapphire sky as we begin our story in South America. It's a cloudless day in November, and springtime is underway in the Southern Hemisphere. Petra has travelled to the town of Trevelin in the region of Patagonia, Argentina. Despite its position at the foot of the Andes Mountains, it's a town that's as Welsh as it is Argentinian. It's one of many such settlements formed in the 19th century by Welsh migrants. Wanting to protect their language and culture, these people decided to leave Britain and start anew across the Atlantic. The first Welsh settlements were on the east coast, places like Puerto Madryn, a popular tourist destination. A statue of a Welsh woman stands on the promenade today as a monument to those who founded the city. South of Puerto Madryn is Trelew, which is famous for its wool trade. The town has many bilingual schools where lessons are taught in both Welsh and Spanish. And there are several nonconformist chapels. Trelew is the host of the annual Eisteddfod, a festival that celebrates the best of Welsh culture. People flock here every year to compete in poetry, prose, music, and dance. Trevelin is one of the later settlements, located around 400 miles west. The area is known as Cumhavrid, translated in English as Pleasant Valley. To Petra, it's a region that seems pleasant indeed, and not entirely unlike the country of Wales. Perhaps the Andes reminded the immigrants of home and the Welsh mountain ranges. Today is Petra's third day in town. She's a month into her tour of the South American continent. A trainee doctor from Bulgaria, Petra is taking a gap year to travel around the globe. Already, she's adjusted to a slower pace of life, one where she's free to follow what intrigues her. She came to Trevelin after hearing about its wonders from the travelers and locals she encountered across the continent. So far, it has lived up to its reputation. Trevelin is even more charming and beautiful than she had imagined. On her first day here, Petra travelled to a vineyard, one of the southernmost vineyards in all of South America. She wandered between rows of flowering grapevines, with the stunning backdrop of the Andes Mountains. The air was fresh and incredibly fragrant, as she could smell the sweetness of the grapes. At the vineyard, there was a restaurant that had windows instead of walls and a large open door. Petra enjoyed views of the vineyards and mountains as she sampled the wine and a range of local dishes. Her meal included a delicious salad, its ingredients fresh from the garden. There was creamy pumpkin soup and homemade gnocchi, colored pink with a beetroot sauce. On her second day here, Petra hired a driver and took a guided tour of local scenic spots. She drove on roads that swirled like ribbons along lush green hillsides with lakes at the bottom. She glimpsed soaring mountains capped with snow, which were mirrored in the water. It looked like a scene from a postcard or the cover of a travel magazine. Petra hiked through the national park on a path surrounded by emerald trees. And she paused for some time at a gorgeous waterfall, where a stream of white water cascaded down the cliffside. She also visited the hydroelectric dam, which provides energy for the aluminium plant in Puerto Madryn. The area had been flooded to create a stunning reservoir. To Petra, it seemed as endless as the ocean. Trees were visible beneath the turquoise water, like a secret world, an underwater forest. Petra enjoyed the most beautiful hour ambling around the bay, over land made up of branches and tree trunks. Along the shore were driftwood structures made by travelers. This morning, Petra's nature tour continued with a trip to a farm where tulips are grown. At this time of year, the farm opens up to tourists who can visit the grounds and see the tulips in bloom. Petra had seen photos of these beautiful flowers even before she arrived on the continent. Yet none compared to the sight of them up close, their colours vivid in the lovely spring weather. The plantation she visited was very large, the size of several football pitches put together. There were rows and rows of eye-catching tulips, with around 30 different shades on display across the field. Petra thought it looked like a fallen rainbow running vertically across the fields towards the snowy mountains. She saw pinks and whites, reds and purples, and the brightest yellow petals that perhaps she'd ever seen. She can still see the colours if she closes her eyes now, and she can smell their perfume on her skin and clothes. It's as if she carries the tulips with her as she wanders into town this afternoon. Petra is keen to explore the local area. She wants to visit the museum and discover the town's history. She also plans to stop for refreshments in one of Trevelyan's legendary tea rooms. Petra wanders happily along the leaf-strewn pavement, among a mixture of buildings in all shapes and sizes. Many are bungalows with roofs of brown slate. Others are taller and flat across the top. The majority of buildings in town are detached and separated from their neighbours by substantial gardens. Each one is uniquely charming, though green lawns are a common feature. In many ways, this place reminds her of home. In Bulgaria, the streets are decorated with roses, and here, trees and flowers adorn every pavement. Petra walks to the main plaza, the town square at the heart of Trevelyan. It's shaped like a large roundabout and is as much a park as it is a town square. Trevelyan's main avenues all lead to the plaza. It's surrounded by shops, cafes, and restaurants. It's also home to the tourist office, where Petra hopes to pick up a map. She strolls around the path beside bright green lawns. The smell of cut grass gives the feeling of springtime. Massive, tall trees form patterns on the pathway, their shadows gently swaying in the afternoon breeze. The tourist office building looks as if it's from another time. The walls have been painted in the softest shade of yellow and contrast beautifully against a roof of chestnut tiles. The office is surrounded by a lovely garden. The lawns have been expertly manicured, and framed flower beds are dotted about the grass, displaying roses, tulips, and bright orange peonies. A large wooden plaque stands above the peonies, and Petra pauses to read the message displayed. It says, "Bienvenidos a Trevelyan," meaning "Welcome to Trevelyan." The words below, Pueblo del Molino, refer to its history as a mill town. The words are written in bold, white italics and stand out beautifully against the dark wooden background. More charming still is the image between them. The Trevelyan coat of arms within an oval frame. The lower half of the oval displays snow-capped mountains with evergreen trees lined up at its base. On the right, A bushel of grain represents the historic flour mills, while a cow on the left reflects its current reputation as a cattle-rearing town. The upper half of the image is part of the flag of Argentina. It forms a sky of powder blue, with a strip of white running through it. The sun is visible, as if rising behind a meadow, and it's topped by the red dragon, the symbol of Wales. A statue of this dragon stands high on a pillar nearby. Sunlight glitters on the copper surface, revealing the scales of its body. Historically known as the Red Dragon of Cadwaladr, it's been an emblem of the Welsh since the mid-7th century. Immortalized in folk stories, myths, and legends, the Red Dragon defeats the White Dragon, which represents the invading Anglo-Saxons. This creature certainly looks ready for action, with its large copper wings rising high above its back. Its tail curls over into an arrow-like point, and its mouth is open, revealing a long, forked tongue. Petra has heard stories about this particular dragon. It breathes fire every night at 8 and 10 o'clock. She's already planned to come back at 8 to watch it. For now, though, she continues towards the entrance to the tourist office, passing 3 flagpoles that rise tall from a flower bed. There's the flag of Argentina, sky blue and white, with a golden sun at its center. Then there's neighboring Chile, including bands of white and red, and a blue square in its corner, featuring a bright white star. And finally, there's the flag of Wales, with strips of green and white, a background for the scarlet-red dragon. Petra enters the tourist office, where she's happy to receive a very warm welcome. She's given a leaflet and a map of Trevelin, along with directions to the local museum. It's just a 5-minute walk to reach the building, located off an avenue that connects to the plaza. She passes bookshops and a supermarket and a few bed and breakfasts before turning into the street where the museum is located. The building is 4 stories tall and flat at the top. It was originally a mill used by the settlers, before being converted into a modern museum. The town's history is founded upon flour, used to make bread, which was then sold throughout the region. The name Trevelin is derived from a Welsh word meaning mill town. A 19th-century cart sits on the grass outside the building, its massive wheels painted red like the dragon. The cart itself is green, a deep shade of jade that sparkles like a gemstone. Petra passes the cart on her way inside the building, where she's greeted by an English-speaking guide. He tells Petra that his name is Enzo, and he'd be delighted to take her around the museum. They go up the stairs to the first floor, to a vast room with lofty ceilings. The floors are wooden, a rich mahogany, and the walls are white, making the space seem even bigger. Various large objects are laid out around the room, including pieces of machinery. Many are objects that the Welsh migrants brought over on their months-long journey across the Atlantic. The equipment includes historic machinery, like a steam engine tractor, which was used to plough the fields without horses. It looks like the front of a steam train. There's also a huge machine known as a thresher, which essentially works by beating the grain. Seeds are then separated from the stalk and husks, resulting in a collection of edible grain. Other objects include carts of different sizes, some to transport people, and others to move produce. And there's machinery that was used within the household, like the old-fashioned wringer for drying clothes. Enzo is in his mid to late 50s, but he looks like a boy when he talks about these objects. He clearly has a passion for history, and it's the kind of enthusiasm that's charming and infectious. His eyes light up as he points out the ringer, remarking that it looks like two rolling pins pushed together. Clothes are passed through a gap between the rollers. Then the handle is turned and the clothes are wrung out dry. Black and white photographs are hung on the walls, displaying pictures of farmers at work in the fields. Beside the photographs are tools and various saddles. They draw the eye, standing out against the background of white walls. Petra feels as if she's absorbing the past as she wanders through the room of historic objects. And this feeling only increases as Enzo leads her up another staircase to a room where the walls are dotted with more photographs. They're portraits of the settlers, many in frames of elaborate gold. They include figures like John Murray Thomas, the first Welsh settler to obtain Argentine citizenship. Enzo points out a group photograph taken 25 years after the immigrants arrived. It was captured by John Murray Thomas and shows the group who travelled on the ship, the Mimosa. According to Enzo, a few intrepid travellers had set their sights on relocating to Patagonia. They'd visited the region and found great potential, and they had been offered land to make their own. Back home in Wales, they wrote up leaflets describing the virtues of Patagonia, which were distributed among the local population. About 150 people were persuaded to emigrate, to build a Welsh community far from their homeland. The Mimosa departed from Liverpool, England, in May 1865. It took 2 months to reach the coast of Argentina. Most of the migrants were from the Rhondda Valley, a coal mining region of South Wales, and they had a shared dream of a Welsh utopia, one nestled in the heart of the Chubut Valley. Enzo tells Petra that the settlers' lives weren't easy. They arrived in midwinter after a period of drought. Fresh, clean water was very difficult to come by, until a woman named Rachel Jenkins managed to irrigate the land. Their survival is a story of resilience and teamwork within both the immigrant community and the indigenous population. The native Tawelchi taught the Welsh settlers how to hunt, and they exchanged meat for bread. Petra gazes across the faces of these people, dressed in the fashions of the 19th century. Their expressions are serious, and they look hardy. They stand close together, united in their purpose. Petra wanders among an array of personal memorabilia, gramophones, typewriters, kettles, and crockery. They're pieces of home that the Welsh brought with them, more than 7,000 miles across the Atlantic. Petra feels a sense of wonder as she examines the details of these items from the past. There are pipes, hairbrushes, lamps, and teapots. And in a glass cabinet, clothes are displayed on mannequins. Enzo introduces Petra to his favorite exhibit. It's a reed organ, made from glossy walnut wood. When the keyboard is played, air flows out past a vibrating metal strip, creating music. It really is a stunning piece, as much an ornament as it is an instrument. Every inch of its surface displays intricate carvings, and a rectangular mirror is set above the stand. There are even arms that jut out beside it, one with a lamp set down on its surface. Petra imagines a lady playing the keyboard, reading sheets of music made golden in the lamplight. It must have been comforting to these Welsh pioneers to bring what was familiar with them on their journey, to take tea and cakes and listen to the gramophone, and to stand and sing around the piano. When Petra has walked the length of the museum, she offers Enzo her heartiest thanks. He really has been a wonderful tour guide. He's given her a whole new perspective of this sleepy little town. It's late afternoon when Petra leaves the museum. The sun remains bright and the sky cloudless. She wanders along the pavement back towards the plaza. Her mind is set on visiting a tea room. As she strolls along the avenue, the town is tranquil, as peaceful as ever. There's very little traffic, and only the occasional passerby. The air is filled with the melodies of birds. Petra walks at a slow and easy pace, enjoying the shade of the trees along the pavement. They sway in the breeze, their leaves rustling, and she can smell their scents carried in the air. Petra uses the map from the tourist office to find her way to a nearby cafe. She knows that she's arrived when she sees the huge teapot. It's positioned outside the cafe within a flowerbed of roses. The air outside the tea room smells utterly delicious. It's a mixture of warm tea, cakes and pastries. It's hard to imagine a place more inviting. And the room inside is just as lovely. It's every bit the traditional Welsh tea room, with white tablecloths and porcelain tea sets. Though there are hints of Patagonia in the Argentinian-style floor tiles, the sandy wallpaper, and the wood-tiled ceiling. Petra sits down at one of the many free tables and is soon greeted by a cheery young waitress. She hands out a menu written in Welsh, Spanish, and English. Petra orders tea and a selection of cakes. She's eaten some wonderful food during her time in Patagonia, from asado barbecue to vegetarian empanadas. Last night, she tried a pizza topped with chickpea fainá, a delicious pancake laid over the pizza. Still, nothing quite compares to the afternoon tea that arrives on her table just a few minutes later. It's a meal that demonstrates the best of Trevelyn, a delicious fusion of Wales and Argentina. There's a portion of Welsh cake, a bit like a scone, but flatter. It's round and golden, and dotted with currants. Beside it are pots of jam and whipped cream to spread on the surface. Another slice has the appearance of fruitcake. It's called bara brith, which is Welsh for speckled bread. It's soaked overnight in litres of tea, resulting in a cake that is moist and fragrant. Beside it is a slice of classic apple pie and a cream cake topped with sugar-crusted pastry. Another pie is topped with desiccated coconut, its insides gooey with dulce de leche, caramelized milk. Petra smells the treats on the table as she pours tea from the porcelain pot. The pot is covered in a hand-knitted tea cozy. She stirs in milk and a teaspoon of sugar and closes her eyes as she takes her first sip of the tea. It's warm, sweet, and beautifully soothing. Just what she needs to relax and unwind. When she opens her eyes, she notices the walls of the tea room and the framed photographs placed upon them. They're not so different from the pictures in the museum. Black and white photographs showing people from another time. But these people share a family resemblance. They are the generations of locals who have run the tea room. Petra sees the same features in the waitress who served her, the latest in the family to work here. The room is full of charming little touches. There are ornamental flags and hand-painted vases. Below the cakes on the plates are white paper doilies, decorative mats cut into symmetrical patterns. Petra samples the cakes, cutting off slices and savoring each bite. From the tea-soaked fruitcake to the milky caramel of the dulce de leche pie. In between bites, she enjoys sips of tea, and she thinks of the faces that she saw in the museum. She thinks of those people enjoying tea and cakes after a long, hard day of outdoor labour. Such a ritual was no doubt relaxing, but it was also much more. It was a statement of identity. Welsh cakes offered them a taste of their homeland, a way to stay connected to where they'd come from. Petra thinks back on what she's seen in Trevelin. The rainbow-like fields of blooming tulips, the waterfall, the reservoir, and the vineyard with mountains in the background. She can see the mountains now from the window of the tea room. They're a comforting sight, watching over the town. She understands why the Welsh chose this place to settle, the Pleasant Valley. It's a tranquil little haven beneath the mountains. A slice of paradise, as sweet as these cakes. Later, Petra will return to her hotel. She'll spend a few hours reading and relaxing before heading out again. Then, she'll walk back to the main town square and watch the Welsh dragon breathe fire into the darkness. It's a moment to treasure for a long time to come. One of the many great memories she's made in Trevelin. She'll always remember this place fondly. A sleepy Welsh town at the foot of the Andes. For now, she'll linger in this cozy little tea room, sampling the delights of these local cakes. She feels relaxed and present and wonderfully content, filled with gratitude to be in such a place.